streets of Brattleboro, Vermont, an idyllic small town in rural America where people sleep in the woods and on a church floor. That's the Homelessness Marathon on Wednesday, February 19th. Tune in.
Hear the Homelessness Marathon on Wednesday, February 19th, beginning at 4 p.m. on KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor a talk, Struggling to Win, Chilean Anarchists Building Popular Power. The talk by three Chilean anarchist organizers is on Wednesday, February 19th at 7 p.m. at PCC Cascade Campus in the Terrell Hall Building in room 122. Terrell Hall is located at North Jessup and Kirby Streets. This event is brought to you by the Institute for Anarchist Studies, the Hell of 503 Collective, and Portland Central America Solidarity Committee, and is hosted by PCC's Q Club. That's Struggling to Win, Chilean Anarchists Building Popular Power, Wednesday, February 19th at PCC Cascades Terrell Hall, room 122. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
This is KBOO Portland. The time is 5:05 p.m. Stay tuned for the KBOO Evening News. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Laurelhurst Theater and Pub, independently owned and operated, featuring modern, independent, and classic films, microbrews, pizza, salads, and wraps, located at East Burnside and 28th in Portland. 503-232-5511 or laurelhursttheater.com.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the hour-long membership drive special edition of the KBOO Evening News, students weigh in as Portland Public Schools head for a possible strike on Thursday.
The Department of Justice will hold a fairness hearing tomorrow on their settlement with the Portland Police over excessive use of force.
Global warming melts events at the Sochi Olympics.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Monday, February 17th, 2014. KBOO is currently in our membership drive, and we'd like to urge you to become a member by calling 877-500-5266.
I'm Rosalind Scott.
And I'm Mike Klepfer. A former asphalt plant in northwest Portland near the Willamette River could become a major crude oil terminal. The site would be one of the largest crude oil terminals in the region, spanning 39 acres and hosting a total capacity of 46 million gallons. The company behind this effort, Arc Logistics, is leasing the plant from Core Energy, who recently purchased the plant for $40 million. Arc Terminals, the operating arm of Arc Logistics, currently runs 17 terminals throughout the country. Federal data show that one-third of those facilities are out of compliance with the EPA. Northwest Portland's proposed crude oil terminal is one of many throughout the region, and is an unprecedented amount of oil is being shipped by rail lines. Health professionals, environmental organizations, state agencies, and emergency responders have all expressed concerns about the project. According to federal data, more oil was spilled from rail lines in 2013 than the previous 40 years combined. Last year, an oil train derailment killed 47 people in Quebec, Canada.
Representatives from Portland Public Schools and the Portland Association of Teachers are in the midst of a last-chance mediation session. Portland teachers recently voted overwhelmingly to authorize a strike starting this Thursday should negotiations fail. KBOO's Joe Meyer reports that the students are in solidarity with their teachers.
Current Portland Public School students will be among the most affected by the looming strike later this week, and they're organized.
My name is Ian Jackson. I'm a senior at Cleveland High School and a member of the Portland Student Union. The Student Union is an all-inclusive group of students made up of all four grades. Each union chapter collaborates with the other. We have rep assemblies bi-monthly, come together, talk about each school's struggle, and then work on a broader struggle. So, for example, the current teacher solidarity campaign we have going with Portland teachers in their contract negotiations.
Class size has been a sticking point in negotiations, and even caused Portland Public Schools to file a complaint with Oregon's Employment Relations Board asking that the pending teacher strike be proclaimed illegal. Under Oregon law, school districts don't have to bargain class size, and Portland Public doesn't want to.
We would like the district to come to an agreement to the teacher-student focus proposal. We believe that the teachers' union is bargaining on behalf of students, and we don't see the district doing that. Right now, there's 180 student cap in high schools per teacher. And the district's proposed contract has taken language out about that cap. The student focus proposal also would like to work to lower class sizes for the future. The district hasn't agreed to that. And so everything that the teachers are bargaining for is going to help students, and I don't see that in the district's contract.
Portland Public claims not to have the money to reduce class size. Ian suggests that district budget priorities would benefit from greater openness.
We really like the district to work on allocating funds. There's no democratic process in deciding the budget, and a lot of the money that the schools receive stays in that district building. And so if there was a democratic process in the allocation of funds, we would see more money flowing into the schools. For example, at the district office, for every two employees, there's one managerial position. And for every 1,000 elementary students, there's one counselor. And so I don't see it. The money flowing into the schools, I see it staying up in the district's bureaucracy.
Portland Public School students are calling for greater openness in the decisions made about their education. I ask Ian how the student union is run.
The union is run horizontally. It's a non-hierarchical student union, so we have no presidents, and there's equal leadership positions. It's not completely leaderless. We acknowledge that there are natural leaders that come to power and that leaders are a good thing. We just like to stress that everybody's a leader and we want to empower all student voices. We have facilitators at each meeting and they switch weekly, so each student learns how to facilitate a meeting and how to run that. And then we encourage a step-up, step-down policy, so if you're talking a lot, be aware of that and maybe take a step back. And if you're not adding as much to the conversation, maybe take a step forward. And we want really to encourage that everybody has an equal voice.
The district sent out notices to parents in preparation for a walkout this week. They plan to reopen schools with substitutes, starting at the lower grades and in schools with a high level of free and reduced lunch.
If the teachers go on strike, the students will go on strike, and we'll stand on the picket line until they win, because the teachers are fighting for students, and we want the best schools that we can get.
Students have pledged to walk out with their teachers in case of a strike. Will this hurt their education, or is this part of the new Portland curriculum?
I believe I would sacrifice my education by staying home, and because if I'm not out on the picket line, there's a less chance of the teachers winning, which means they won't come out with a good contract, in turn, a decline in our education and the value of our education. So I would need to stand out there in the picket line to fight for that, and I think it's a learning experience to learn about unions, learn about labor, and learn about how a strike works and how you can strike and win.
That was Cleveland High School senior Ian Jackson. He plans to stand with his teachers on the picket line should it come to that. And I'm Joe Meyer with KBOO News.
Tomorrow, individuals and groups will be testifying at a fairness hearing in downtown Portland about the excessive use of force by Portland police. The hearing is the last stage of a nearly year-long process to resolve a lawsuit brought by the U.S. Department of Justice against the Portland police. The lawsuit came after a federal investigation found that Portland police use excessive force in many situations, particularly against people in mental health crises. For more, KBOO's Jenka Soderberg spoke with Dan Handelman of Portland Cop Watch.
I understand that people are signed up to testify. This is the public hearing that people are able to weigh in on this settlement.
Yes, and the judge made it very clear that he wants to hear from the community about whether they think that the settlement is fair, adequate, and reasonable. And what's unfortunate about the way the law works is that the law instructs that he has to decide either it is fair, adequate, and reasonable, or it isn't. So he won't necessarily be able to change the little parts of the agreement that are really going to hamper our ability to organize over the next 5 years without throwing the whole thing out directly. However, I have hope that this judge, who has been very creative so far, will figure out another way to direct the city and the DOJ to go back to the table and fix those parts of the agreement that are going to be hampering to the community.
So if the judge isn't able to find a way to make changes in the settlement, would you prefer that this settlement be thrown out altogether and renegotiated?
Well, that's a great question. I mean, the things that the Bureau has already done to take steps towards implementing this before the judge has even entered it in the record are things that are potentially useful. The agreement itself has a paragraph in it that says this agreement can be modified by vote of the City Council. So as long as the DOJ and the Police Association aren't standing on rocky ground, I would say, and saying we don't want you to change a single word of this, it's possible even if this gets put into the record, that changes could be made. But it's going to take a lot of community involvement on an ongoing basis. There is, as part of the agreement, what's called a Community Oversight Advisory Board that's supposed to be looking at whether the agreement itself is being implemented properly. And I'm hoping that part of what they do also is make suggestions to City Council about what they can use that paragraph for to change the agreement to make it actually so it will do what it's supposed to do.
And what impact has the Portland Police Union had on the settlement that did end up getting negotiated?
Well, that is an excellent question. It's hard to know what direct influence they had, but in November, the Police Association, which had been holding up the agreement until then, agreed to let it be entered into the court record, but they signed a memorandum of understanding with the city that says we reserve the right to challenge a couple of things. And one of those things is being directly interviewed immediately on scene when a shooting happens. And another one of them was being interviewed by the Independent Police Review Division, which is supposedly our police review board, our independent review board. And changes were just made to that IPR, to the oversight system, where they're going to be able to do independent investigations, and it's not clear whether the Police Association is going to file a grievance about that, even though the changes aren't actually what the community's been asking for. The changes that were made they require that a member of the Bureau be in the room with the IPR to order the officer to answer questions. So it's still not even independent. And in addition, the PPA talked to the city about some new policies that were created under the agreement about taser and use of force, and those policies got changed behind closed doors and reposted by the Bureau quietly just days before the Police Association contract was approved by the Council. So they've clearly had a lot of influence in some ways, even though it didn't change the terms of the agreement itself. They have a lot of influence over how the agreement is being implemented.
And, of course, the Portland Police Association refers to the union that all Portland police officers belong to. Now, I wonder if you can tell people if someone is interested in testifying either from their own experience of the excessive use of force by Portland police or just have thoughts on how police should be governed and what kind of oversight there should be. How can people get on the docket for testifying? Where do they go and what do they do tomorrow for the fairness hearing?
All right. Well, there are some instructions on the Albina Ministerial Alliance Coalition's website, which is albinaministerialcoalition.org. If you go to the DOJ tab there, it tells you where the hearing is, which is at 1000 Southwest 3rd at 9 a.m. Tuesday, February 18. There's also an email address for the court clerk, who is the person you need to talk to when you get there to sign up. And as I said, there are people who sent in their testimony prior to January 31st, and those people are going to get priority, but the judge wants to hear from everybody tomorrow, and I think it's really important for people to tell the judge what they think about the agreement. And if they are going to talk about their personal experience, I think it's just, you know, to the extent possible in the time that we have left, to look at the agreement and say, and this is how this ties into the agreement, and this is why I think that the agreement doesn't go far enough, and just so that there's a connection between what they're saying, what the judge is expecting to hear.
I've been speaking with Dan Handelman with Portland Cop Watch. The website of Portland Cop Watch is portlandcopwatch.org. If people are interested in finding out more about tomorrow's fairness hearing, Tuesday, February 18th in downtown Portland, the website is albinaministerialcoalition.org. This is Jenka Soderberg with KBOO News.
KBOO volunteers have stepped up their game to bring you this locally produced newscast every single evening, so now we're asking you to do the same. Joining us now are Jenka and Ani to talk about how you can support KBOO Community Radio.
Thanks, Roslyn. This is Jenka, and as you just heard, I produce a news report, and I produce the evening news every day as the news director here. It's a lot of work to dig up these hidden news stories, what's going on behind closed doors in Portland politics, the state legislature, and the country. We do it only with your support, by dialing and supporting KBOO, whether you can do the $40 basic membership, whether you can owe $120 at $10 a month, whatever you're able to do to support this locally produced newscast, one of the only locally produced newcasts in the region, and we do it with volunteer power. All of the voices that you hear on the air are volunteers, and they come in every day going out to the front lines of the Portland teacher struggle, giving you live reports from the rallies and the school board meetings, and producing this daily newscast. By supporting this newscast, you can support the volunteers, you can support the small staff that we have here at KBOO. Again, the phone number to call, 877-500-5266. Again, 877-500-5266.
That's right, Jenka. It's exciting to be here this evening, supporting the PM News and all the volunteers that make it happen. We have a $200 goal for this hour, and that's a very modest goal considering the amount of work that goes into locally produced news. I have talked to many other community radio stations and have found that very few other community radio stations actually endeavor to produce their own daily newscast because it is so labor intensive. But we do it here because you, our community, wants it. You demand that we have access to the airwaves to go behind the scenes, to dig deep in those stories, and to bring it to you unfettered by corporate interests. We're beholden to you, our dear listeners, our grassroots support, for your funds to actually pay the bills here at KBOO Community Radio. That's how we do it. One person at a time, one listener at a time, calling 877-500-5266. I want to thank Ken renewing his membership in Northeast Portland. Ken says he enjoys it all. Kathleen from Mosier says KBOO changes her life. We love to hear that. Audrey from Portland says that we have been her favorite radio station for discovering new music since she was in high school 20 years ago. She thanks us for all the great programs we have. Katrin in Corvallis loves the music, loves the bluegrass, loves the jazz, says it's all great. Linda in Troutdale listens all the time. It's a wonderful thing to be a part of this community radio station. And right now, we're making sure that you know you have the opportunity to be a participating member of community radio. Give us a call at 877-500-5266. Or online, you can donate securely and quickly at kboo.fm. However you choose to do it, we ask that you pick up the we ask that you do it now. And I suggest going ahead, picking up the phone, and letting us know you're there and that you care. 877-500-5266.
In the Oregon State Legislature today, the House Committee on Higher Education considered a bill that will look into the possibility of providing free community college tuition to any Oregon student who graduates from a high school in the state. Here's a recording of some of the testimony from this morning's committee meeting in Salem.
Finances is still the number one barrier to going to some kind of technical training or higher education. And so what this bill does is at least offers them an opportunity to find a path to the middle class. Because I think we all now are at a point where we don't see any viable pathway from high school to the middle class. The reality for most, maybe not all, but for most people in this population is there's a pathway that leads directly to poverty. Poverty is very expensive. So that's the problem we're trying to get to here, is to find opportunities for these kids to go to a community college for 2 years at no cost to them, to become a welder, to get a certificate, to become a medical assistant, to learn how to be a diesel mechanic, or to take 2 years of transfer credit so they can pursue a four-year degree at one of our universities. We've asked the Higher Education Coordinating Commission to do a technical study on the kinds of things that would be needed to make this come about, with the hope that we can pull the trigger on this in 2015. The second problem that seeks to address is one that you're very familiar with, and that is the debt load coming on the students after they leave higher education, after they leave a university. It's somewhere over $20,000 a year. And so this population that I mentioned faces this Sophie's choice of sentencing them to a crushing debt that they'll experience for many, many years, or sentencing them to a life where they'll likely be in or near poverty because they don't have the technical training and higher education needed to make it in our global economy.
That was testimony from a hearing in Salem this morning on a bill that would look into providing free community college tuition for students who graduate from high schools in Oregon. If passed, the bill will not actually put the free tuition into effect, but will launch a study on statewide impacts of such a measure. Ultimately, the legislators proposing the bill would like to see the state offering free tuition to high school graduates beginning in 2016 or 17.
In Olympia, a new bill has been proposed in the Washington State House that would allow students to attend college without any upfront cost. House Bill 2720, called the Pay It Forward Bill, states that after leaving school, a student would pay 2 to 5% of their annual income based on the type of education received. The payment would last 25 years, and as one's income changes, so would their payment. Tuition has more than doubled at the University of Washington since 2002. Student loan debt is now the second largest category of household debt in the United States, behind home mortgages. Under the proposed bill, Washington would also start a Pay It Forward program at five different high schools spread throughout the state that serve low-income students. Representative Larry Sequist, who introduced the bill, is hopeful he can attain bipartisan support. The bill is currently headed for the State House Appropriations Committee.
Oregon lawmakers will soon have a chance to ease restriction on advertising raw milk, thanks to a lawsuit filed with the State Department of Agriculture by Christine Anderson, owner of Cast Iron Farm in McMinnville, Oregon. In 2012, a state regulator visited her farm and advised her that advertising her dairy's raw milk on her website violated the law. The violation could have resulted in her being fined up to $10,000 and possibly going to prison. While she was legally allowed to sell her raw milk, she was not allowed to advertise it or even mention it on her website. So, she filed suit saying that being unable to advertise or mention her products violated her First Amendment right to free speech. Anderson says that she plans to put a sign on her property and to list her raw milk at its sale price, $14 a gallon, and how it is made on her Cast Iron Farm website. She claims to have no shortage of raw milk customers. The Oregon Department of Justice is reviewing the settlement details of the lawsuit, and the Oregon Department of Agriculture agreed to ask the state legislature to repeal the ban on advertising raw milk and says that during the review, regulations will not be enforced. Restrictions on the sale of raw milk will still be in effect. In Oregon, raw milk may only be purchased directly from the farmer, and farms are only allowed to have 3 milk cows for raw milk production. Retail raw milk raw milk sales are allowed in Washington State.
Yesterday, a power outage caused gallons of sewage to be released in the Willamette River. Oak Lodge Sanitary District released an estimated 440,000 gallons of sewage into the Willamette River when the outage began at 11 o'clock last night. According to the Sanitary District, the power outage was caused by high winds which felled trees, damaging power lines. The district also said that during the outage, an electrical component failure prevented a backup generator from starting. Sewage overflow lasted an approximate hour and 30 minutes. The district posted warning signs and advised the public to avoid contact with the river for at least 24 hours. Sewage was also released from a manhole in Oak Grove because of high river levels.
You're listening to an hour-long membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. We'd like to remind you that you can call to renew your KBOO membership or become a member at any time during this program by calling 877-500-5266. Stay tuned for Labor Radio at 6 and Prison Pipeline at 6:30. At 7, it's a special program on longtime political prisoner and journalist Mumia Abu-Jamal. The weather forecast for Portland is showers tonight with a low around 42. More rain and gusty wind tomorrow with a high near 50. However, sunshine is guaranteed if you call 877-500-5266 to show your support for KBOO.
It's 5:29. Time for daily commentary from Jim Hightower.
In The Wizard of Oz, Dorothy assessed the odd thing she was experiencing and said to her little dog, Toto, I've a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore. Lately, Senator Pat Roberts has gained a new understanding of what Dorothy meant. The Kansas Republican has been in the U.S. Senate for 18 years and was in the House for 16 years before that. So he's been away for a long time. And now that he's running for another six-year Senate term, Roberts has learned that the Kansas he thought he was from, a state of relatively moderate Eisenhower-style Republicans, has become the political land of right-wing Oz. A rabidly extremist, coke-headed Tea Party Republicanism has taken hold of the GOP's primary process and blown out the moderates. The upshot for Roberts is that Republican voters are now hard-right, howl-at-the-moon lunatics who demand ideological purity over everything else. Worse for Pat, they've put up one of their own to run against him in the August primary. But by gollies, the senator is fighting back. Unfortunately, not by standing on principle and refusing to be intimidated by crazies. Instead, Roberts has put on his crazy pants, altered his beliefs, and is dancing like a fool with the ideologues. He recently opposed the farm bill he helped write. He joined the certifiably goofy Ted Cruz of Texas in the silly political stunt that shut down the government of the USA last October. And he even became part of the Tinfoil Hat Club by voting against a United Nations treaty to ban discrimination against people with disabilities. This is Jim Hightower saying, come on, Pat. You've been in Congress for 34 years, you're 77 years old, and you're getting a gold-plated pension for the rest of your life. Is six more years in the Senate really worth selling out people with disabilities? Not to mention, selling out your own integrity?
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to. For information, visit hightowerlowdown.org.
You're listening to a member drive special of the KBOO Evening News. Our volunteers work hard every day to bring you this coverage of local, national, and international news. So now it's your turn. Joining us now are Ani and Jenka to talk about how you can support KBOO Community Radio.
Thanks, Mike. And for people who don't realize, we are live in the studio here at KBOO Community Radio on this Monday evening, February 17th. And we are asking for your support for this locally produced newscast. The way that you can do that is by joining your friends Kurt in Portland and Paul, who supported the KBOO newscast by dialing 877-500-5266. Every day we bring you investigations and exclusive stories about your community, empowering you to make a difference in the place where you live, right here in the Portland area. We also reach to Salem, to Corvallis, to Hood River, and up in Washington. I have heard some people say we reach out to the coast. So if you're in one of those outlying areas, you know that that KBOO Community Radio provides a lifeline to the type of news that is really difficult to find. We put it all together. Our volunteers do the work, record the interviews, go out in the field, and also do the maintenance of the equipment, like our intrepid engineer a week ago Sunday when we had all that snow hiked up to our tower and thawed out our antenna that was frozen. And we know that you appreciate this, and it takes money to keep it coming to you week after week, day after day. The number to call to support this radio station, 877-500-5266. If we can just have 22 people giving $1,000, that'll get us to our final goal of $94,000, or maybe 1,000 people giving $22. We're getting closer and closer to that $94,000 goal, and we know that we can do it. Again, 877-500-5266. Support KBOO Community Radio. Your contribution is tax deductible. And maybe if you haven't given in a while, maybe you gave a long time ago and you don't remember when, give again. Give now. $75 will get you a USB flash drive filled with exclusive content. 877-500-5266. Again, 877-500-5266.
At the Olympics in Sochi, Russia, temperatures have reached the low 60s. On a warming planet, future winter games are in jeopardy, along with the winter recreation industry as a whole. Environment Oregon, a citizen-funded environmental organization, is using the Olympics to build momentum and highlight specific global warming concerns. For more, KBOO's Blake Fetterson spoke with Charlie Fisher of Environment Oregon.
Charlie, can you highlight the various ways global warming is affecting Winter Olympic sports?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, we're talking an increased rate of snow melt, shorter winters, drought, and a shrinking map of reliable winter host sites. Those are just a few of the climate impacts threatening the Winter Olympic Games, and unchecked global warming could accelerate these changes. For example, at the 2010 Vancouver Olympics, organizers had to truck in and manufacture tons of extra snow. And the unusually warm conditions that trigger these extreme measures really could become the new normal.
What are some of the biggest contributors to carbon emissions right now, and what do we need to focus on as our number one priority?
The single largest contributor to global warming emissions, carbon emissions specifically in the United States, are power plants. So if you look at just the 50 dirtiest power plants in the country, their total carbon output is more than the total carbon output of all but six nations in the world. First of all, preventing new dirty power plants from being built and then ratcheting down the pollution from these existing power plants would be a huge step towards tackling global warming as a country. And luckily, President Obama over the summer in his climate action plan proposed regulating carbon emissions from power plants. And in fact, the EPA has a public comment period open until March 10th. Where the public can officially show their support for regulating carbon emissions from new power plants in the nation.
In what ways is Environment Oregon organizing this year?
We are doing a variety of things. First of all, we're just reaching out to the public. In January, we held a series of events across the state, first of all, bringing attention to this and then just collecting public comments to deliver to the EPA. We have a really broad membership base that has spoken up. Over 1,000 of our members have already sent in public comments. And then we're also working with state officials around the state legislators. We've been organizing them to thank President Obama for his leadership on this issue and urge him to keep to his climate action plan and for the EPA to finalize these rules as quickly as possible and make sure they're as strong as they can be.
How can people get involved with Environment Oregon?
A variety of ways. The first would be to go on our website, environmentoregon.org, and actually submit an official public comment to the EPA in support of carbon emission regulation from power plants. I would encourage them to call their elected officials at the state and federal level and ask them to speak out on global warming action. And then, you know, just doing everything they can individually to reduce their carbon footprint so that we can not only do this on an individual level, but really what we need to do is regulate carbon on the federal level to clean up these dirty power plants.
Any concern more regionally?
Oh, certainly. Well, you know, we think that coal, oil are the energies of the past, and we need to be moving forward to clean energy solutions like wind and solar. Here in Oregon, we're pushing to set a goal as a state of getting 10% of our energy from the sun by 2025, and we need to put the policies in place that make that a possibility and make it easy and affordable for people to invest in solar. And then I think the real thing to be said here is that, you know, we're talking about worse wildfires across the state. as a result of global warming, ocean acidification, and decreased snowpack that is really adversely affecting the outdoor recreation business here in Oregon that rely on snowpack for the ski season.
Really, anything else that you want to add with what you're doing?
No, just that, you know, this is kind of one of the last chances we have to act on global warming. This is the issue of our time, and I encourage everybody who cares about this issue to speak up, comment to the EPA, go to our website, environmentoregon.org, and be a part of this movement.
I've been speaking with Charlie Fisher, field organizer with Environment Oregon. This is Blake Fetterson with KBOO News.
A study released this weekend documents the connections between a number of chemicals and brain development issues in children worldwide. The study provides possible origins for brain-related disabilities, including autism and attention deficit disorder. The toxic chemicals linked to these disabilities include commonly used industrial toxins like lead, methylmercury, and arsenic. For more, KBOO's Jenka Swedenberg spoke with Professor Philip Grandjean of the Harvard School of Public Health in Boston, the lead author of the story.
Could you tell us about the study that you have just been a part of, linking toxic chemicals to a global silent pandemic affecting children worldwide?
What we did was simply to go through the world literature from our own experience in doing research in this area. And what we found is that there's an increasing number of chemicals where we now have convincing documentation that they can affect negatively the development of the human brain. And our conclusion from that is that this number of chemicals, which is now growing, is in fact dictated by the, let's say, the opportunities for doing this kind of research rather than necessarily those chemicals being the worst or the most dangerous or most toxic. Our conclusion is that the human brain, which is such a complicated organ, it also has to undergo a very, very complex development for all of these nerve cells to be at the right places, the right numbers, and with the right connections. Those biological processes are so vulnerable at the same time to toxic chemicals. So our conclusion is that we need urgently to figure out which chemicals can actually have these kinds of effects so that we can prevent them from interfering with the intelligence of the next generation.
So what's the impact? What are some of these neurodevelopmental disabilities that you've linked to these chemicals?
Well, if worse comes to worse, the child will have a medical diagnosis that could be autism or ADHD or spastic paresis. And these are complex diseases where we don't quite know what all of the causes are. But what we are seeing is that less severe problems are much, much more common. And that's like the child lags behind in development, has problems in school, or problems with attention span or language acquisition. Some of them have behavioral problems, and some even get in conflict with the law. And so these are issues that do not result in a medical diagnosis, but they're very common in society. And what we're saying now is that they may have an etiology. They may be caused in part by environmental pollution with industrial chemicals.
Now, one of the things that that you advocate is to test industrial chemicals, saying that these tests are already available. What kind of tests are you talking about, and how would they be implemented?
Well, there is actually a test protocol that the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency has developed using rats and mice, And there's a similar test protocol from the OECD that has been approved internationally. But the new development is that you can actually carry out these tests using cells in a Petri dish to see which ones should we really worry about and think about controlling so that we're not exposing the next generation to them.
I've been speaking with Philippe Grandjean, an adjunct professor of environmental health at the Harvard School of Public Health. His study, along with Philip Landrigan from Mount Sinai, was published this weekend in the medical journal Lancet Neurology, linking toxic chemicals to a global silent pandemic striking children worldwide, particularly the brain development of children. This is Jenka Soderberg with KBOO News.
Now is your chance to show support for the work our volunteers put in to bring you this newscast, rain, snow, or shine, every weekday throughout the year. Joining us now are Jenka and Ani to talk about how you can support KBOO Community Radio.
Thanks, Rosalind. This is Jenka, and I am very excited to be here with you on the KBOO Evening News to share with you the importance of supporting great programming like this. The way to support this program and all of the programming that we do here at KBOO is by picking up your phone and dialing 877-500-5266. KBOO Community Radio, we produce 20 out of every 24 hours each day right here locally in our studios in Portland. On the weekend, it's 24 out of 24 hours. And just as a matter of perspective, the station just to the right of us on the dial, OPB, produces less than 2 hours of content a day locally, and on the weekends, even more, even less than that. Here at KBOO, we are committed to the local news reports that impact your life. If you think about what you just heard about evening, even just today on the evening news, about the crude oil terminal planned in Northwest Portland, this is the first report that has been on any media about this, and we're reporting it here at KBOO. An update from the Portland teacher strike that's looming on Thursday, the fairness hearing that will happen tomorrow for the Portland Police Department. Every single day, we're reporting on these local issues. We bring you updates every week on the city council meetings in Portland, updates on the Right to Dream 2 houseless rest area, the struggle to maintain Portland's open reservoirs. So many of these stories are brought to you by KBOO reporters who work hard, go out and dig up these stories, and all we ask of you is a monthly donation of $5 a month, $10 a month to allow us to keep this type of programming going. It's so easy to do. If you have never been a member before of KBOO, now's your chance. Pick up the phone and become a member. Pick up the phone and dial 877-500-5266 and commit to doing $5 a month to support this type of radio. I'm here with Ani, who is our volunteer coordinator at KBOO, and all of the volunteers come together during this membership drive. It's a fun time to be at KBOO, and you can come down and join the party, 20 Southeast 8th, and do your contribution that way. You can meet all of us here, and you can meet Rosalyn and Mike, who are doing the news tonight, and Ian there running the board, pressing the buttons, making it all happen.
It's a great way to really get your evening started. You can see exactly how your money is spent in support of Community Radio. It is a wonderful thing to do. We love to meet our listeners. Come on down to 20 Southeast 8th or give us a call if that's not convenient and join that way. Go ahead, give us a call right now. 877-500-5266.
Venezuela's president, Nicolas Maduro, has expelled 3 U.S. consular officials for conspiring against the government of Venezuela. The move follows last week's violent crackdown on protesters in which 3 people were reported killed. Opposition leader Leopoldo Lopez disappeared for 3 days following the crackdown and reappeared over the weekend with a demand that the Interior Ministry take responsibility for the deaths. Authorities accuse Lopez of leading a coup against Maduro with the help of U.S. agents.
And now, the latest news and development from the occupied territories in Palestine from the International Middle East Media Center in Bethlehem.
Welcome to Palestine Today, a service of the International Middle East Media Center at www.imemc.org for Monday, February 17, 2014. Palestinian political prisoners on hunger strike move to hospitals. Meanwhile, Israeli troops demolish Bedouin tents near Jerusalem. These stories and more coming up. Stay tuned. The Palestinian Society for Political Detainees announced on Monday that four hunger-striking political prisoners held by the Israeli army have been moved to hospital after their health deteriorated. All four are on hunger strike since 40 days in protest of administrative detention policy the Israeli army is using to detain them. Under administrative detention orders, the Israeli army can keep Palestinian political detainees for long times without charges or being sent to court. In other news, Israeli army troops invaded the town of Beit Umar near the southern West Bank city of Hebron, searched homes and kidnapped three teenagers. According to residents, the three boys were playing in their land during the invasion. The land is located near the illegal Israeli settlement of Karmein Sur. Elsewhere, Israeli army bulldozers demolished on Monday at dawn five Bedouin tents and two huts in Al-Izariya town east of occupied Jerusalem. The Israeli army announced that the structures were built on what they called state land. The owners said that they are living in the area since before 1948 and this land is not state land. And that's all for today from the IMEMC News. This was the Monday, February 17, 2014 news roundup from the occupied Palestinian territories. For more news and updates, please visit our website at www.imemc.org. Today's report has been brought to you by George Shmawi and me, Ghassan Badmura.
In the latest news from U.S.-occupied Afghanistan, Afghan President Hamid Karzai ordered changes to a draft of new criminal legislation in response to an international outcry, warning it would severely limit justice for victims of domestic abuse. Afghanistan's parliament had passed a new criminal procedure code that would ban relatives from testifying against alleged abusers. While the legislation awaited signature from Karzai, human rights organizations and several of Afghanistan's Western allies, including the U.S. and European Union, voiced strong concerns it would effectively curb prosecutions involving violence against women, where relatives are often the only witnesses. A former minister of the Afghan Taliban, who is in favor of peace talks with the Kabul government, has been gunned down in Pakistan's northwest city of Peshawar. Armed assailants riding on a motorbike shot Mullah Abdul Raqib, a former minister for refugees during the Taliban regime, according to reports earlier today.
You're listening to the KABU Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Robin Ryan, Blake Feddersen, Rosalind Scott, and Jenny Kangas. The producer is Joe Meyer. Our engineer is Ian Westmoreland. The KABU Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Jenka Soderberg. A podcast of local stories from this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. Or look for us on Twitter at KABU News. If you'd like to call your elected representatives about any issue you've heard on the news tonight, here are their phone numbers, so get a pen or something to write with. Actually, we don't have their phone numbers. You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath, 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River, 91.9 FM. I'm Mike Klepfer.
And I'm Rosalind Scott. Coming up tomorrow morning on KABU, at 7, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8 on the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show, Host A. Proctor and Joe Uris talk about media monopolies in last week's merger between Comcast Corporation and Time Warner Cable. At 9 on Alternative Radio, we hear from the host of the show, David Barsamin, who spoke in Portland in early December. At 10, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15, hear Flashpoints, investigative news radio with host Dennis Bernstein. And at 11:30 on Art Focus, host Joseph Gallivan interviews Dawson Carr of the Portland Art Museum about Venice, the golden age of art and music.
Coming up next is Labor Radio. But first, we head back to Jenka and Ani to talk about supporting people-powered community radio, the only 100% volunteer-hosted station in Oregon.
Thanks, Mike. And we are waiting for a few more of you to call this hour before 6 o'clock to support KBOO Community Radio. We don't fill up your newscast with ads like so many stations do. We need your support. This is the way that this station is funded. All of the contributions, whether it's a $40 basic membership, whether you could do $10 a month out of your checking account, all of that adds up to KBOO's annual budget. We know everybody's short on money, but think about it. Can you give a $500 gift to support KBOO? That's less than $10 a week. Are you willing to pay $10 a week for hard-hitting, factual, accurate, independent news that you get here on KBOO? The number to call to support the evening news and to support KBOO Community Radio is 877-500-5266. You know, media consolidation is at an all-time high. Even in Portland, which is somewhat progressive, five companies, Entercom, CBS, Clear Channel, Salem Communications, and Bustos Media own 70% of the radio stations. That's what makes KBOO so important. Don't let us get pushed off the air by the big capitalists. Support locally produced volunteer newscasts like this one, 877-500-5266. I say like this one, but there really isn't anything like this one.
Right? And that is because our volunteers make a huge difference. They come in because they are impassioned to share news and information. They want to learn radio arts because they want a voice in the media so that they can bring to light the goings on that are so often hid, that really need, it's like the vampire test, right? If these laws and these ideas and these underpinnings get brought to light, people will not stand for them. That is part of the importance of independent news and independent radio. That is KBOO. Call right now with your pledge of support, 877-500-5266. Join us. Join in community radio. Become one of our sponsors. We are a grassroots radio station, and we rely on you, the grassroots, to keep us independent and community supported. 877-500-5266.
You've only got 3 minutes left to support the KBOO Evening News, and I encourage you to call in right now. Maybe you've heard us asking over the last week, but now is the time to actually step up and do it and support community radio. Local news shows like KBOO's are increasingly rare. The Oregonian newspaper recently cut its newsroom staff by more than half. Other local media agencies have cut their local news all together. You turn to KBOO to provide virtually the only original reporting about issues in your community right here at home. 877-500-5266. These are the people in your community who are coming in and producing these news stories on a daily basis.
That's right, Jenka. And it's a wonderful thing to be able to work with so many passionate volunteers who care, who want to make this world a better place, who want to provide this news and information. They do it for the love of it. They don't do it for the paychecks, right? They're volunteers. And right now we are relying on you, the community, to pay the light bill, to pay that transmitter bill, and to keep us going strong for the next 46 years. 877-500-5266 is the number to join us. I have to say, joining us at a rate of say 1 hour's wage every month is a great way to sustain KBOO throughout the year and a great way to contribute a significant amount of money over the course of the year, but in easy bite-sized pieces, and it evens out that support throughout the community. I love that option. Please do give us a call and let us know that you would like to give 1 hour's wage every month to make sure you have access to independent news and information, locally produced news like the KBOO volunteers, the news team brings you every weekday evening here, 5 o'clock at KBOO. 1-877-500-5266.
Only 2 minutes left to support the evening news. You can do it now.
I want to thank Lynn from Portland, who was finally pushed to contribute because of the Bluegrass Marathon this weekend. She loved the local talent we were putting on the air, but she also likes all of the political shows that we have on as well. Also, I want to thank Courtney from Portland, who says that after years of listening, she figured it was about time that she actually become a KBOO member. Maybe that's you. Maybe you've been listening for quite a while. Maybe you were a KBOO member. Oh, but it's been a little while. We want to welcome you back into the fold. We want you to know the difference that it makes when you are a contributing member of KBOO. The radio sounds different. You know that it is part of your energy that is actually making it happen, that is putting that voice in your speakers. You are a supporter of independent media, and that means you are a supporter of your entire community. Give us a call at 877-500-5266 or online kboo.fm.
You know, maybe you did give a while ago and you can't remember the last time that you gave, but you know you made that call a long time ago. Now is the time to do it again, because that one-time donation, while we thank you very much for it, is not enough to keep us going day after day, year after year. Since 1968, KBOO has been on the air. If you can't remember the last time that you sent in a membership contribution, it's probably been longer than a year. So go ahead and call again. Keep KBOO going strong. Maybe you did give during the last membership drive. Well, I say give every single drive, and even better, give every month. Do a monthly deduction from your checking account, $5 a month, $10 a month. Maybe you already give $10 a month, but you realize that you could increase that up to $20. Do it right now. 877-500-5266. We're going to go to Labor Radio. Keep those phones ringing. 877-500-5266.
KBOO is proud to co-sponsor the 24th annual Cascades Festival of African Films. Over 20 African films will be screened between January 31st and March 1st, 2014. Thursdays through Saturdays at Portland Community College, Cascade Campus, and Hollywood Theater. The films celebrate African achievements, expose Africa's failures, and reveal the possibilities for change and a more hopeful future. The majority of films were made by African directors and show us pictures of Africa through the eyes of Africans rather than a vision of Africa that is packaged primarily for Western viewers. That's the 24th annual Cascade Festival of African Films at the Portland Community College Cascade Campus and Hollywood Theater from January 31st through March 1st, 2014. More information can be found at the right-hand side of kboo.fm under Community Events.
Coming up next on KBOO, it's Labor Radio. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Redirect Guide, committed to promoting progressive regional businesses based upon the values of sustainability, localism, and social justice. Complete business directory and resource guide at redirectguide.com.
To you, the 9-to-5er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Good evening, it's 6:02 p.m. You're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM, Portland. This is Labor Radio, and tonight we have a couple of very important guests. We have, in fact, a very important person from the Veterans and Piping Program, or the VIP program. That's Mike, and we're going to talk to him in just a few moments. And then we've also got Amy in the studio, who's here to talk about her career as well. But first, it's time for us to talk about the annual membership drive. And we're here every Monday. We're here with Labor Radio. We're getting the message out into the community. We're completely community supported. And so that means that we depend on your donations. We completely depend on your giving and your generosity. We're not funded by corporations. We're not held liable to them for our messages. We are able to do what we do because of your giving. And if you can afford to give anything, that's great. If you can afford to make a donation right now, even $5, even $10, the number to call is 877 800-500-5266 and get on the phone right now. Call, just give a little bit, give anything that you can. If you can give $5 a month, we can set you up for auto deduction from your checking account right now. This is what keeps the station going. We got to pay the light bills and the electricity. There's a fee to keep the radio station going. And since we don't take corporate sponsorship to pay for all of that, then we depend on you, the listener, for your generosity. And in fact, if you'll call right now and donate, I've got $200 in my pocket, and for everything that you donate, I'll match that up until that amount. That's all I got. If I had more, I would match you for everything that called in, but get those phones ringing right now, and I'll match you exactly what's in my pocket, dollar for dollar, on your donation. The number is 877-500-5266. It's such an important thing, you guys. The community radio... You know, so many places are merging these days. The media choices, the outlets that you have to go to, the places that you have to listen to, it's getting fewer and fewer. If you appreciate what we do here, if you appreciate the message, please just give anything to keep us on the air. Call with what you have. The number is 877-500-5266. Also around here is Larry. Larry, are you there? I guess Larry's going to he's gonna talk about his pitch and just... a little bit later. Do we have Mike on the air? I guess we don't have Mike on the air. Mike maybe will join us in a little bit to talk about the Veterans and Piping Program. But right now I have in the office with me Amy, and far from the Veterans and Piping Program, which is a construction program for veterans, she does something different. She works in an office and she's a professional. Amy, can you tell us what you do?
Hi, thanks for having me. So I am a business writer, and I essentially specialize in proposal development and management in the green sector. So I essentially write proposals to utility companies to get my consulting company new business.
Well, it sounds like a lot of fun. What kind of background do you have to get into a job like that?
Well, all of the people that work with me have very varied job backgrounds. And myself, I went to Portland State University and I majored in psychology and pursued minors in business administration and professional writing. Now, at the time I was doing this, I had no idea where I was going to go career-wise, and I just kind of took classes that were of interest to me. And I really found myself gravitating toward the business side. So when I graduated, I had a friend who I went to school with refer me to this internship in the HR department for a consulting company. And I thought, hey, it's an internship. I have my degree now. I really was looking for a full-time job. But I thought about it for a little bit and realized that it would be a good entree into the working world since I had been a student for so long and hadn't really worked in an office before. So having this part-time position was a great way to get started.
Awesome.
So I worked in the HR department for a while and afterward was referred to the business development director for the company and started my main career that way and just worked my way up.